Once upon a time, there were four little rabbits.
How old are you, Johnny? She asked.
16.
We few, we happy few, we band of brothers.
It was the best of times. It was the worst of times.
A wise old king once said, "Of the making of books, there is no end." How true today. Of the overabundance of writing published each year, what's worth reading? The answer is simple. Read only the best. Come join the discussion on Just the Best Literature.
Hello again, everyone. Thanks for listening in today. Here is a letter that came in to me about Thad Carhart's incredible memoir, The Piano Shop on the Left Bank. And it's really, I think it really ties in with what we're doing with the program. And I'll try and condense the letter a little bit. But it says, "Hello, JBL. I was listening this week to your discussion about the new book," and that means the Piano Shop on the Left Bank, "that you are now talking about on your program. And I remember an incident that happened back in 1963 when I first got married. I had written a biography of my husband's life for my son. Here's what I wrote. So when we first moved into our apartment, your father asked me to make a list of the furniture that we needed. On top of my list, I wrote, number one, a piano. He said, when your father saw that, he exclaimed, 'Are you crazy? We don't even have a bed yet, and you have a piano as number one on your list?' And I said, 'What is a home without a piano?' I asked. Needless to say, I didn't get my piano at that point in our marriage." She goes on, I'm going to skip down the letter a little bit. "So, well, 12 years into our marriage, your father was able to get a free old Boston-made upright piano for me." And she goes on to say that he borrowed a work truck and he was able to bring it home. She says, "It was one of the happiest days of my life. So many times my husband and son and I went down and sang songs together as I played. Even now when I'm downstairs doing the laundry, I love to stop in that room and play my piano and sometimes sing hymns to God and just myself. What is a home without a piano? By the way, my grandson is taking piano lessons, and when he plays his little songs for me in that piano, how wonderful is that? I hope I haven't taken up too much of your time. I just wanted you to know I appreciate Just the Best Literature programs, but especially this last one." So I thought that was a great comment from all the way out there in probably frozen New Jersey right now. So I heard they're having bad weather. Okay. So, as I promised last time, Ryan Malone is back here in the studio with me, and he is, remember, our host for Music for Life. And in case you're listening for the first time, we've been discussing Thad Carhart's mesmerizing memoir, The Piano Shop on the Left Bank. Now, last time we got talking, and we actually talked too much.
But, well, it's good to be back and do some more.
Yeah. So he's back. So welcome back, by the way.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'm trying to now get into the next part of this program without giving you enough time to educate us more. But I did think one of the really important sections of the book to me was the whole chapter that he has, chapter 11 on his adulthood lessons with Anna. Mm. Maybe we can briefly talk about that because the reason I think this is important, you know, my wife and I, you know, we inherited this piano and from her parents. Her parents are dead now. And basically what's happened is that piano's become a great piece of furniture to hold family pictures.
Uh-huh.
And so, right. So reading the book, this has really driven my wife now. She has all those childhood memories again of her family getting around the piano. And she says, let's get this tuned up and let's start working with it again.
Right.
So I think there's probably a lot of adults out there that are reading this book thinking, oh, maybe I should do this. Maybe I shouldn't do this. Should I get back into the piano? And I thought maybe you could just make a few comments about that quickly so that we can help motivate them to do something.
Right. Well, I mean, even the piano itself, we were alluding to this last time, but he talks about how it's a living organism because of all that wood. And it's really important to keep playing the piano. I think he mentions that on page 149. But when he gets back into lessons as an adult, he talks about, on page 112, for instance, he says, well, I'm rediscovering something from my childhood. You know, that's something we all can relate to, whether it's the piano or not, the idea of that link to the past. And he talks at the bottom of that page about selecting a teacher, and he put himself in the driver's seat. Now his parents weren't paying for lessons. Now it wasn't something he had to do. It was something that he wanted to do. He chose to do it. He parted with his hard-earned paycheck to get piano lessons, and that gave him a unique angle on education that I think really applies to all education. Is like, when we want to learn it, if we put forth the effort, we put forth the investment, we're going to learn it. And I use that example of his adulthood lessons with Anna as a way to motivate our young students to say, look, yeah, there's something about you being here that's, you're sort of being made to do it because you're young. But yet the idea that you would put yourself in the driver's seat like he did and say, well, this is what I want to learn, and drive the lessons accordingly. I think that's a lesson that they can learn. You know, here he was learning as an adult because of he had a mature mind. You know, the kids are more like a sponge and they can learn things a certain way, but adults already have all these experiences to draw from. So Anna was really using that and letting him understand the theory behind what buttons he was pushing. Well, this is why you're pushing these down together. And so that was really, really neat. It brought back memories for me of my first piano students were a grandfather and his 7-year-old granddaughter. So he had me start a beginner, but he was kind of like Carhartt. So I was dealing with a mind that had this history, and just watching him, you know, rediscover that part of his youth was really inspiring.
So I think you could assume then, let's say if you're the older listeners out there listening to this, that if you had experience on the piano, you know, when you were younger, and then you gotten away from it, but if you'd like to get back to that, I would think, Ryan, that choosing a teacher is just as important for an adult as it would be for a younger child.
Oh, definitely, definitely.
And the thing that impressed me with Anna, I would have liked to have, I don't know if she's still alive, but I would have liked to have met her and talked to her, because she seemed so patient, and yet she seemed so disciplined
right
at the same time. And it seems like to me, I mean, I've never heard Carhartt play. I mean, I don't know what his real skill level is.
He's probably okay with that, too.
Yeah.
He didn't like playing for people.
No, isn't that funny? But you know what? The thing is you go back to what Luke says, what good is music if you don't play it for people?
Right.
So if anybody out there listening in, if you would like to get back into this, I'm sure, Ryan, you would be willing to help them find a teacher in their area if they wrote you or...
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Well, and even just, I think, you know, when we wrap up this discussion, if we get to some of the things I'm hoping to cover about what he talks about, the lessons of life it teaches,
right.
I think that really would inspire people to do that if you had any history and think, well, if I'd only stuck with it, you know, it is something that if you have the time and the desire, it really can open up just a fantastic world.
For anybody out there listening, on page 208 of the book is where he talks about finding a teacher as an adult. And so you can also read that for yourself. Again, we want you to be reading it. We want to, the whole purpose of this program, and certainly inviting Ryan in, is to get you inspired to read the book.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we've read it, and so we're inspired. So, hopefully we can just encourage you to read the book. I just think that's important that to me, what this book has done for me, and it's not so much in music, although I have been trying to teach myself the Irish penny whistle.
Uh-huh.
But the thing is I was an art student in high school and early days of college, and I got away from it because it was the time where everything was kind of a little weird. You know, this is back in the 70s. But this book is really, I've actually been taking a drawing course, and it's kind of like I've been fuddling around with it. But when I read this book, it really motivated me to, okay, I need to get more discipline with this because I love it. I can enjoy it and I can relax it. So anyway, I think if you're wanting to do the adult lessons, you need to really just take the jump and get some help, though. Get some counsel as well. Okay, so let's go to our next section that we had there, and that was the piano's place in the family. And what my wife was most impressed about, I think, when Carhartt talked about, you know, a piano is part of a family, and it's really interesting. Now, I've known Ryan's parents for years. I've known, we won't tell everybody how long I've known, you know, Ryan, but I know his wife, I know his children. He has three wonderful children. One is very talented on the cello. One is very talented on the violin. The other one is looks like she's multi-talented in terms of singing. And she's working with a harp, and she's also working on some percussion instruments. So let's jump into that discussion. Let's talk about the piano and the family. About the social aspect of it.
Definitely. Well, that is a really moving part about the book, and it really ties into the letter you read earlier. About
This
is the number one thing we need in our house.
Yeah,
is we need a piano. Well, I remember, you know, even though we talked about last time how my mom was my first teacher. My dad was an untrained, like, nightclub pianist. He played a lot of the jazz standards, and he'd go in there, and he knew chord progressions, and he would play, and he would get me at the top when I was, you know, barely able to stand and say, here, play these notes while I do this. And so it was jam sessions with Dad in addition to the going through the book with Mom. And so that was part of that's part of my memories as what our family did was we did music. And then thinking about what he talks about how, you know, girls would play the piano when the piano became really the home entertainment system. There was no stereo yet, no radio, no Netflix. It was the piano was the center of home entertainment. And if he said a girl had to know how to play piano is as important as other social etiquettes. It made her marriageable, he said. You know, like, can she play the piano?
Was great.
Yeah, that's
standards are a little bit different today.
It's a little different, but I looked for piano skills and I found them. So yes. Page 101 and 102, he talks about that the engine of entertainment in the Western world was the piano, and even in my home, like you mentioned, I'm there at the piano working with my kids and, you know, accompanying them on certain things or using the piano as a way to introduce them to music before they even went to those instruments that they're taking now. So it really is a centerpiece of our home. And I don't think just because we're musical. I think everyone would find, you know, if they use the piano properly like he does, he puts it in the home and treats it with the proper respect and puts kind of centers the family around it in a way in terms of their time together. It really does create this wonderful atmosphere.
And I think it created it for a lot of us because I remember years ago, I don't know where we were, but I remember you and your dad getting together and playing four hands on the piano.
Oh, yeah.
And just you know, all of us that were there that night, I think it was just a great night. It really was fun. And it could have been here in Edmond. I just don't remember the exact date. But you were young. I mean, you were still in your teenage years. Mm-hmm. And he's not now, by the way. And neither am I, even though I feel like I'm 19 sometimes.
Me
but,
too.
Yeah. But anyway, that's the thing that I think what my wife is missing now. Her parents have died. You know, her father just died last December. So I think that's in some ways what she's thinking. Well, maybe if we get this going again, sometimes the grandchildren want to come over and play the piano, but it's out of tune and there's a couple keys that need to be fixed. And so we've actually called a piano tuner to come in and we're going to do that here in the next couple of weeks. He said he'd give us a fair price if there was any repair. So, but I do think it's interesting that he brings some of these things out about that the new forms of home entertainment, they've really replaced some culture that we're losing in our society. And that's kind of been the goal of JBL as well, is we're trying to get people to read an actual book. And not that we're down on electronic devices, but when you sit down with a book, you have more interaction. And it's actually, they know there's studies that's better for your brain. And I would think the same thing. When we go into our hall and we hear live music, I think that's much better for our brains than just hearing it like through your earbuds. You know,
speakers can only fit a certain range of frequencies, and it's not going to be the same as you know, as it coming to your ear acoustically. Yeah, certainly the time period we live in, we have people do our music for us, you know, and this was a time where you needed someone in the family who could play the piano so that you all could do music together. So music went from a participation activity to more of a passive, someone else do this and I'll sit and watch. And I mean, there's enrichment in that, but you know, it does bespeak of a time change.
Yes. Well, one thing too, I want to say, like my father-in-law, he was raised Quaker, and they were not allowed to have instruments.
Mm-hmm.
So what he did when he was at it was the only Quaker school in Ohio, is he bought himself an harmonica and hid it, and he taught himself how to play the harmonica.
What a rebel!
Yeah, he was really a rebel. He was very musically oriented. And as my children were growing up, he would come visit. He'd bring his harmonica, and he would play the march from Aida on this harmonica. Huh. And my kids would have pot lids and all that. But all of my daughters, you know, are musically
right
talented.
Right.
And I believe they got that in the family. And they got it from a harmonica.
Right.
Yeah, because it didn't come from me. You know, so but that's really kind of fascinating.
Right.
So really, there is a way of bringing families together. And I think that is missing in our society. And it's really one thing that we really need to get back to, where we're not just all divided. And I think music is a great way to do that. And
definitely.
And especially piano music. All right. So, but you can really get in the book, all you listeners out there, and we've given you some of the page numbers, even page 106. You can go back and read that about how home entertainment's been replaced. But I know that the one area that both Ryan and I really want to spend the rest of the time for this program, and Mr. Malone is so scheduled to get two programs is great. And then the 60-plus panel is going to be in for next week. So I know everybody looks forward to them coming on. But there's one section that he calls a masterclass.
And right.
I just think that is one of the most important chapters in the whole book.
What he was learning lessons for life, particularly with that teacher, George Shebuck, the Hungarian, who came in and they said, well, people came to these master classes who weren't pianists. Painters came, you know, entrepreneurs came, all sorts of different people came, because they knew even though he was going to work on this Beethoven sonata with this pianist, he was going to be dishing out life lessons. And that really is a microcosm of what Carhartt's doing in this book is, I was struck with all the metaphors that he uses just from a writing standpoint, but I thought, you know, actually those metaphors are really connecting people to the piano and helps them understand what he's talking about. And just thinking about like what he talks about Shebuck's masterclass, and he says, it's on page 216, you know, he says, everyone goes, writers, painters, people from the community. He teaches the piano, yes, but at the same time he manages to teach something profound about life. And then at the end of that chapter, which is basically page 224, he says, there's no such thing as music note by note, just as there is no such thing as a book word by word. We have to accept things that are ambiguous. Shebuck said to one of the students on the last day of the masterclass, is there any more fundamental lesson that we must learn as we mature? As my friend had told me, he might have been talking about all of life, not just music.
Right.
And that really shows you what this book can do.
Well, the one thing about this chapter that I think stuck out with me most is, I think we go to the very beginning of it. I didn't write this page number down. It's actually page 208. And I really like what he had to say there. And it's like, I'm not ashamed to say I'm 65. I'm very happy to be 65 years of age. I feel like I have a lot of youthful vitality in my mind. I feel like I'm 19. But I do think he says something here that's important for even seniors to learn. Is he said, with Anna, this is at the very beginning, just a couple sentences, he says, during the first several months of my lessons with Anna, I rediscovered the simple joy of having a teacher. And the one thing is, That I feel like my wife and I, we've had these experiences together. She's hasn't taught her foods class this year, so she came on board as my teaching assistant for developing that new Shakespeare Kings class. And we're doing the tetralogy from the Wars of the Roses. And, you know, we've learned so much together. And I think what happens to humans is you feel like you get to a certain age where you don't need a teacher anymore. And that's a mistake.
Right.
And that's why I really believe if you're out there and you want to become an artist and you're 65, work at it. Do something. Take a class.
Right.
And if you want to get back into piano, or if you want to get back into a violin, or if you want to get back into any instrument, do it. What's stopping you? I mean, if it's if it takes a little bit of money, maybe you could find someone that could help you. But it is interesting that he said that one of the big things going back to Anna was he had to learn the value of self-discipline.
Right.
Now, those are lessons for life. We do need teachers. Even if you're 65, you need a teacher.
Right.
And if you're going to do anything good in life, whether it's cooking, painting, drawing, anything, you're going to have self-discipline.
Right. And then it's just at the end of that page, he says, you know, to return to that as a grown-up was deeply humbling but strangely exciting. Only a teacher can provide the push that allows the infinite perfectibility of music to take flight. So whatever it is we're doing, I mean, you can always learn more. And a teacher, you need a coach, you need a mentor.
I thought it was interesting that Anna, you know, when she's trying to get him to relax, and he's so nervous about getting his fingers onto the right key, and,
right.
You know, and she says she's trying to get him to relax all the time, and so one day she brings him a gift, and the gift is Zen and the Art of Archery.
Right.
You know, that was so popular when I was in college. You know, right. It's like, it was Zen in the Art of Motorcycle Racing. It was Zen in this. You know, you heard Zen so much.
Right.
But here, she said you need to relax, mm-hmm. You know. And so I thought, you know, most seniors, we do need to relax. and just, you know, life isn't over. Life can begin every day.
Right.
You know.
Well, so. And he talks about, even just to answer your question earlier about, like, what would, you know, convince people to go back to it. I mean, just it's even the metaphors that he uses about piano, where, you know, he talks about the piano as a flying carpet to travel to different places. He said, we reveal a lot of ourselves when we enter the world of our passions. Luke believed how people treated pianos mirrored their personalities. He said that someone's attitude about pianos is how he measured a person's worth. He called piano a secret pathway into another world. A piano is a train leaving a station to another world. He keeps talking about, well, this is a way to just really go somewhere else in a good way, you know, yeah. In a really productive way.
Yeah, you know what I like most about all those statements you just made? You're into literature.
Right. That's right.
So we have a pianist into literature.
That's
now.
That's right.
But it really is, I think the book is really, it really is written so well. But you see, I think the disciplines cross. And that's why I'm really thankful you were able to come in, because there is like this master class, what he learned from Anna, what he learned from, you know, the masters. I mean, you can apply all that even to art. And I know I'm taking this class. It's an online class, but it's from David Brody, who is an art professor at the University of Washington. And the thing that he stresses, he sounds just like Anna. You know, he stresses the fundamentals, and you have to understand like the geometrics behind drawing before you can actually add the color or add the sure. refinements. And it just brought all that back for me. And it's actually, you know, I've been drawing more now. I've been reading the book. I really need to get into this and really need to get into those fundamentals. And I've been working, you know, we have all the spring flowers out, and I've been working on daffodils just to draw them appropriately. And the one thing, if you really study the daffodil, it's like the Star of David, if you look at the petals with a circle in the middle. Mm-hmm. And so that's what he goes to that fundamental level. Yeah. But the metaphors are great. He's got a couple more. We've kind of prepared some of these ahead. I really like the one on page 39 and 40. A new piano is like driving a convertible with wind in your face.
Right. See, and that makes it relatable. Like, here's something very technical and specialized, playing the piano, but yet, you know, you can imagine driving with the wind in your face. Something.
Oh, like, yeah, I've done that. I mean, we've been able to do that. I think another one's... Well, you already mentioned this before. Beethoven's music could go from whisper to thunder.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's a good one. The history of the piano is history of the Industrial Revolution.
Right. That relates it to history, or it's like a window into European history. Definitely.
Right. I really like the other one. Ryan actually got all this list together. This is on page 148. It's the tuning of piano is like cooking.
Right.
Yeah. If you don't do it right, it's going to sound bad.
Well, and everyone has a slightly different recipe. You know, like there's certain things that make it taste good, but you know, there's going to be some varying ways to get there.
Yes.
Yeah. Just some great ways to make the piano relatable to the reader, and then like to the adult thinking, well, maybe I should go back to that, or I've got the piano just sitting there and it's just rusting up or whatever.
Yeah. Well, I just want you to know, we're definitely getting our piano retuned and fixed, and I think definitely my wife will be getting back into it. I've got to be careful. I'm trying to learn French. I'm trying to do this drawing class. I've got to just devote myself to it. So, but let's look like we're running out of time. But before we go, Ryan does have a special announcement for us on an upcoming program that he's planning for KPCG's Music for Life.
Yes. Well, you had me get into this book, and our second season of Music for Life is wrapping up. So I was getting an idea for another show, so I thought, well, I'm going to have to save this for early in the next season. But I thought, wouldn't it be great? All these pieces he mentions in this book, maybe you're familiar with some and maybe you're not. I made a list of all of them, and I thought, wouldn't it be great to have a Music for Life episode that's called The Soundtrack of the Piano Shop on the Left Bank, so that way you can hear some of the music that he talks about, and then that way we can reference back to this program, even though that'll be later in the summer.
Right.
But then it certainly will help pair these two sibling programs together, so people can talk about the literature here, or they can listen to the music there.
So that'd be great. And what we'll do, all of our listeners out there, we will let you know on Twitter or Facebook, and we'll get the word out to you when that's going to be.
Likewise.
So remember now, Music for Life airs Mondays at 4 p.m. Central Time, so don't miss that. So next time, we will bring the 60-plus panel on into the studio, and they're going to be giving their insights into the Piano Shop on the Left Bank. So again, I would very much like to hear what you have to say about the Piano Shop. Please write me any comments that you may have to jbl@pcog.org. You can follow JBL on Twitter @JBLiterature1. You can also follow JBL on Facebook. The address is facebook.com/justthebestliterature. And remember, you can leave me a comment right there at Facebook. Thanks for coming in today.
Thanks for having me.
And so, everyone out there, until next time, keep reading.
You've been listening to Just the Best Literature on Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG, streaming online at kpcg.fm and thetrumpet.com.